Welcome to the podcast service of Sydney's FM 103.2, available on the web at fm1032.com.au.
Hi, I'm John Dixon. Welcome to Reflection. Over the last couple of nights, we've been looking at the Da Vinci Code from a historical point of view. I've listed no fewer than 16 small but glaring errors Dan Brown makes in just chapters 55 to 58, the juiciest part of the book for modern Christians. There are errors in dates, in locations, the content of various documents, and a lot more. Now, none of this would matter so much. I mean, it's a novel, after all. It's just that the opening page of the book says that all descriptions of artwork, architecture, documents, and secret rituals in this novel are accurate. Except they're not, right? Tonight, I want to turn the spotlight onto one of the really substantial things the Da Vinci Code claims about early Christianity. Dan Brown's characters argue that Christ's divinity, his oneness with God, was not part of the original message. It was added to Christianity centuries after Christ during the reign of Emperor Constantine. It's best that you hear this from the Da Vinci Code itself. So I'm going to give you quite a long quote. I hope you don't mind. Here we go. In Constantine's day, Rome's official religion was sun worship, the cult of Sol Invictus, or the invincible sun, and Constantine was its head priest. Unfortunately for him, a growing religious turmoil was gripping Rome. 3 centuries after the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, Christ's followers had multiplied exponentially. Christians and pagans began warring, and the conflict grew to such proportions that it threatened to rend Rome in two. Constantine decided something had to be done, and in 325 AD he decided to unify Rome under a single religion, Christianity. Sophie was surprised. Why would a pagan emperor choose Christianity as the official religion? Teabing chuckled. Constantine was a very good businessman. He could see that Christianity was on the rise, and he simply backed the winning horse. By fusing pagan symbols, dates and rituals into the growing Christian tradition, he created a kind of hybrid religion that was acceptable to both parties. During this fusion of religions, Constantine needed to strengthen the new Christian tradition and held a famous ecumenical gathering known as the Council of Nicaea. At this gathering, Teabing said, many aspects of Christianity were debated and voted upon. The date of Easter, the role of bishops, the administration of the sacraments, and of course, the divinity of Jesus. I don't follow. His divinity? My dear, Teabing said, until that moment in history, Jesus was viewed by his followers as a mortal prophet. A great and powerful man, but a man nonetheless, a mortal. Hold on. You're saying Jesus' divinity was the result of a vote? A relatively close one at that, Teabing added. Nevertheless, establishing Christ's divinity was critical to the further unification of the Roman Empire and to the new Vatican power base. By officially endorsing Jesus as the Son of God, Constantine turned Jesus into a deity who existed beyond the scope of the human world, an entity whose power was unchallengeable. It was all about power, Teabing continued. Many scholars claim that the early church literally stole Jesus from his original followers, hijacking his human message, shrouding it in an impenetrable cloak of divinity, and using it to expand their own power. Okay, I think I'll end the quote there before you decide to change radio stations. In short, according to Dan Brown's characters, the doctrine of Christ's divinity, so important to the Christian church throughout the ages, was really just the result of a vote, and he says a relatively close vote at that. Dan Brown asks us to believe that the 4th century Emperor Constantine invented the idea of Jesus being divine, forced his views on the Council of Nicaea in 325, and then rewrote the history books by burning the original Gospels and editing some new ones. Brown adds that the Vatican was complicit in all this because it gave them more power. Now they could claim to be the custodians of a god, not just a man. Well, how accurate is this from the historical point of view? It's true that the Council of Nicaea met in the year AD 325. But beyond providing the correct date, everything Brown's characters say about this ancient council and about the New Testament itself is either baseless or the exact opposite of what mainstream secular historians conclude about these matters. Let me just raise a few issues. To begin with, the Vatican, the Roman Catholic Church, had very little presence at the Council of Nicaea. You know, the Bishop of Rome, the Pope, didn't even attend. He sent two lower priests on his behalf. Of the 250 bishops participating in the discussions at the Council of Nicaea, only six in total were Roman Catholics. The rest were Eastern Orthodox from Egypt, Palestine, Syria, Turkey, and Greece. To describe the Nicene Council as a Roman Catholic Vatican conspiracy to power is just novel. Secondly, the discussions at Nicaea were not about whether Jesus was divine, but in what manner was he divine. The council gathered in part to assess the views of a recent theologian named Arius. He had proposed a new way of thinking about Jesus' divinity as a kind of bridge between infinite deity and finite humanity. Now, Arius's views were very attractive to the Greco-Roman world at the time because they fitted with the widespread Greek assumption that infinity cannot be joined to what is finite. God can't be joined to what is man. And it was precisely against Arius's concession to Greek thinking that the majority of bishops at the Nicene Council reaffirmed their belief in Jesus' full divinity. Only two of the 250 bishops in attendance sided with Arius and refused to sign the agreed statement. It wasn't a close vote at all. Incidentally, I noticed that in the film version, they made some concessions here. Teabing and Langdon argue over whether or not Christ's divinity was believed before the Council of Nicaea. Interesting that they changed that for the film. Thirdly, another Dan Brown faux pas concerns the role of the emperor in all of these discussions. Now, Constantine convened this Council of Nicaea and he gave the opening address. That's true, but he neither chaired the 8-week meeting nor determined its theological outcome. And all that the emperor wanted was an agreement between these Christian factions. To quote the Oxford Dictionary of the Christian Church, now this is the scholarly authority on all of these matters, here's what it says. Constantine's main interest was to secure unity rather than any predetermined theological verdict. Actually, you know, there's evidence both before and after the Council of Nicaea that Constantine may have personally inclined to the views of Arius, not the majority view. Such was his commitment to unity that he endorsed the majority view rather than his private preference. In any case, the idea that Emperor Constantine determined what the church taught about Jesus in the 4th century has absolutely no basis in history. Fourthly, the idea that the emperor commissioned the four New Testament Gospels in an effort to promote a divine Jesus rather than a mortal Jesus is historical nonsense. Apart from the fact that we have a manuscript copy of these Gospels, which predates Constantine by more than a century, it's telling to know that Arius and his supporters were using exactly the same four Gospels to make their case about the divinity of Jesus. Both sides in the debate were using the same four Gospels. Fifthly, even non-Christian evidence reveals that Christians worshipped Jesus as divine long before Constantine. For example, in the middle of the 2nd century, okay, long before Constantine, the Greek intellectual named Celsus pours scorn on Jesus, saying these words, "He tried his hand at certain magical powers, and on account of those powers gave himself the title of God." More significant is a letter from the Roman administrator Pliny to Emperor Trajan. The letter can be dated AD 110. This is two centuries before Constantine was even emperor. Describing the crimes of the Christians, he writes, and I quote, "The sum total of their guilt or error was no more than the following. They had met regularly before dawn on a determined day and sung a hymn to Christ as God." This text confirms what we already knew from our New Testament texts. In a departure from both Jewish and pagan thinking, the early Christians worshipped the man Jesus as the embodiment of God himself. The point for now is very, very simple. 250 years before Constantine, Jesus the teacher was being worshipped by Christians as God incarnate. The claims of the Da Vinci Code about how Jesus came to be regarded as divine are completely fictitious. They're not only without historical basis, but actually it's the exact opposite of what historians say about these matters. Tomorrow night, I'll start dealing with one of the other really big claims of the Da Vinci Code, the claim that various hidden gospels contain historical facts obscured by the four New Testament gospels, facts such as Jesus' marriage to Mary Magdalene and his fathering of children. I hope you can join me then.
We hope you enjoyed this FM 103.2 podcast. To listen to more great audio, visit fm1032.com.au.